Welcome back to episode number 37 of the MP Dude. This is Jeff, the MP Dude, giving nurse practitioners a voice. That is all of our voices, including my good buddy Joe, who's with me here today. I finally have somebody that's committed to come and be on the MP Dude. So say hello, Joe.
Hi.
And Joe is a friend of mine from NP school. He is also my research partner for a research project. And I want to lay down some ground rules for interviews, just to make sure that we're not going to be causing any problems to get me in trouble. One is no names of people if we're going to go into anecdotal, like, history talking about stuff. I don't want to hear, you know, Sally once, you know, accidentally, you know, prescribed lithium to the wrong person and killed them or something, whatever. So we're not going to use names, and especially with professors and things like that, so we don't get anybody in trouble or piss anybody off, because it doesn't need to happen. And another one is we're not going to talk about specific patients. We're never going to violate a HIPAA rule. If we have a situation, we will change ages. We will change diagnoses if have to get the point across. We could talk about situations. I got a problem with that. But we're not going to use anything that's going to get us in trouble. So that being said, what do we want to talk about, Joe?
Well, whatever you want to talk about. I'm working in an emergency room, acute care. As a family nurse practitioner, so yeah. I know that's been a hot topic on some of your shows in the past.
Yeah, that's a good one. So Joe is the guy I've been telling, you know, get your advanced, you know, certificate for acute care. And my concern for him was, and if you haven't listened to that acute care in FNP in the ED podcast, go back and listen to it. I think it's episode 20. I can't remember. But go back and listen to that one, and it kind of sets the stage in Ohio. The firestorm is how I describe it that's out there because of the Ohio Board of Nursing Momentum article that was published, I think, in October or September of last year that said no FNPs in the acute care setting, and they kind of scared a bunch of people away. And now it's, you know, there's not been any guidance since then from the Ohio Board. So, my opinion has been get something that says you are acute care or ED or something in a certification or post-acute degree or something. And so Joe's been doing a little research. Why don't you tell us some of the things that you've seen that you were telling me about?
All right, sure. So that Momentum article was brought to me by one of the physician assistants I work with in the emergency department. She was explaining, you know, did you read this thing? Because I actually hadn't read it before she read it. She's like, it's actually your magazine that posted it. And so I read it a little bit. I'm like, well, that's kind of weird. And so I kind of started doing some research on it. And it turns out that the AANP, the Advanced or whatever,
American Association of Nurse Practitioners,
yep. They have a program or a certification rather for emergency nurse practitioner, ENP. There's three ways that they have listed that you can do that. One of them is you can go to school and do the schooling, come out, sit for the exam, pass the exam, now you're an emergency nurse practitioner.
So you would be dual certified at that point?
Correct.
Okay. Dual certification. And that's the one that I was kind of insinuating in that episode 20. Okay. That was kind of the one I was thinking of, but I'd heard of others as well. So, yeah. Okay.
There's also a second way you can do it, which is you do a fellowship in an emergency department as a family nurse practitioner. You get X amount of hours. I think it was like working for there for like a year or something like that, and you can sit for the exam. And
then the third was there coursework associated with that as well?
I can't remember off the top of my head. I just kind of briefly read about it because the third way is actually the way that I'm looking at.
What's that one?
That one is you work as a family nurse practitioner in an emergency department for 1,000 hours. You take 100 hours of CEs that are emergency specific. And you do 30 hours of procedures. Can be coursework procedures or, you know, count procedures in the ER, like suturing,
sign off sheets, basically, yeah. Right? Having the physician or the supervising provider sign off on your skills.
Correct.
Okay.
Which is what I currently have to do to be privileged to work at the hospital I work at. I have to have X number of splints, X number of INDs, X number of trephinations. Suturing, there's all kinds of different things. They even have intubations and everything else on there. Of course, As a family practitioner, I don't get into intubations. That's above my pay grade.
Now, can you just go work in the ED and do like fast track where you're doing basically acute visits that you would see in an outpatient office like I am now in a family practice? You know, I get a lot of really sick people coming in to see me that are borderline going to the hospital. Would that be, I wouldn't see a problem with that. And I think that's where people are trying to define what the scope of practice is. And right now, is that what you're doing?
Correct.
Okay.
So I actually, that's kind of mostly what they want the FNP for. Acute care nurse practitioners, the one I work with, she's attached to the observation unit that our company that I work for also staffs. It's actually our observation unit. She cannot see anybody, I believe she said, under the age of 14, is who she said.
And that was one of the other things that I've talked about in the past, too, where I had somebody ask what the age for an acute care NP or an adult NP.
Right.
In that shutoff, or that cutoff point. And I think that in Ohio, 12 is the age of consent, but that's only for, like, physical contact. But I think that 14, I think I've heard multiple people in Ohio say that number. So if anybody knows out there in Facebook land or listening on my website to the NP Dude, let me know. Put a comment down below the show notes and just say, hey, you know, in Iowa it's 16, or in, you know, Sheboyganville it's, you know, whatever. I don't care. But just let me know what you guys are seeing as numbers too.
Also, I'll put a shameless plug in for iTunes. That's how I listen to the show, is on iTunes.
Do you? All right. Yeah. And you didn't say, well, you did say on the show that I suck, so I appreciate that. So
Jeff, you suck.
I do kind of suck, and that's cool. Joking, so let's take a break and just recognize what we're drinking here. We're sitting down. We're having a Great Lakes, because I went there with my other buddy and got my tour, and I posted about that. And I have Oates McDonald Pale Ale. John, if you're listening out there, I don't know if you are. I doubt it, because you're too busy, you know, making beer. Oates McDonald's pretty good. It's a little hoppy, though. I'm not a real hops guy, but it's pretty hoppy. It's good. Smooth. What do you got?
I've got Great Lakes Lightkeeper Blonde Ale. It's pretty good. It's hoppy as well, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, I already had one of those, so I'm a couple in. I beat him to the punch before he got here. So it's a day off. I'm allowed to, right? I'm still recuperating from this pesky cold, and so my voice sounds like crap still, so sorry about that. So one of the other questions, and I don't know if that answers rounds out the issue of the FNP in the Ohio emergency room or acute care setting. And I think that the AANP being accepting of those three options is a good footing to go to the Ohio Board of Nursing and say, this is what our credentialing board recognizes. There's zero reason why you shouldn't accept it either. So I would feel more comfortable with those three options being approved by AANP, but I would be leery of a program that's not approved by a credentialing body.
Absolutely. You have to have a certifying body behind you.
Yeah. So whether it's ANCC or AANP, I don't think it matters, because Ohio Board of Nursing recognizes both. And I don't know of a state in the union that doesn't recognize those two bodies. And if there is, then tell me, because we need to let that state know and hear about it, because that's a crock. And I don't think there is one. So I feel better knowing that there is a pathway, but it's still another pathway. You still got to do something. Now, What I feel comfortable working in fast track is just an FNP, and I'm not trying to downplay just an FNP, but because it's still a pain in the ass to get. But what I feel comfortable doing that, working in fast track in that, I don't know if I would. I would still probably want something just to cover my ass, because you don't know where that scope is going to blend over, or whether, you know, the physicians are going to lean on you a little bit in certain circumstances that take you outside of your scope, and now you look like a schmuck because you got to say no when you really can do it and you're competent to do it, you're capable of doing those things, and you look like you're just not being helpful.
Right.
And so that would scare me. So I would want to be able to do as much as possible in that setting. And I think that those are good pathways. So I appreciate you letting me know about that. And Joe was like one of the first people to look at that episode. And he texted me and then called me and said, hey, jackass, there's options. And so I said it on today's show that I posted earlier. And this is a twofer. So Joe came over after I just posted the previous show. So we get two today. This probably won't go until tomorrow, though. Just timing-wise. Maybe. I don't know. We'll see. But he said, hey dipshit, you screwed up. You need to fix that because we can do it. It is okay to do, but there is a pathway to get there. And so I appreciate you letting me know about that. And in today's show that I published earlier, I had somebody blatantly call me out on, I don't know if you listened to today's show yet or not.
I haven't listened
yet. He doesn't listen. He doesn't pay attention to my show.
Right.
He just says he does.
it's true.
What it was, and I'm just going to recap to it because it was an important point, that I am relying on people in the community to tell me when I screw up. And I'm going to get stuff wrong. And I'm the first one to admit that. I screw up. You know, Joe studied with me all the time. And half the time he's saying, dude, you got that wrong. And so I need that too. Just because I got a ton of degrees and I work my butt off doesn't mean that I'm right all the time. In fact, more than anything, I'm more willing to be open about talking about things, which puts me out there to be wrong more often than other people. And so I recognize that, and I look for guidance from you guys. And in today's show, if you guys haven't listened yet, which you haven't because I haven't published this one yet, you'll see that I thank one of the listeners for calling me out on something, and it was done exactly as I anticipated the show running. I say something that is blatantly, obviously wrong. You guys say, dude, you got it wrong. Here's more information. Here's some, you know, where I'm coming from in my experience. And now we got it right. And so that's what we're looking for. And now everybody has that information. So that means you guys got to keep listening to my show to get the right answers. See what I'm doing? It's shameless, right? All right. So that was one issue we could just kind of get out and talk about. If you guys have questions or comments or concerns, I can always get Joe on the hook. He's going to go forward with his program, and I'm going to keep track of him, making sure that where he is in the stage. And we'll round up on this one again. I'm sure we'll be talking about it again. So if you guys have questions on it, comments, concerns, issues, costs, with all that stuff, send it to me, and I'll funnel it to Joe. And if Joe doesn't know, we'll send it to the public, and we'll figure it out. All right. So that being said, let's see what else. Working in ED, and I haven't really talked to you much about it. What are some of the most challenging things that you've had to deal with as a family nurse practitioner going to work in the ED as an NP? Well, so Joe worked in the ED as an RN, so that's maybe a little bit different than me being ICU going to work in the ED. But what is it? What's the challenge?
The biggest challenge that I run into is just deciphering down what exactly the patient's concern is. A lot of times they come in with very, very specific yet vague complaints. I say that because a lot of times probably one of the most common things that I see is back pain. You know, the other real common thing is abdominal pain. Two probably most common complaints you find in an emergency department.
I think you get that everywhere. And those are the ones where, you know, in the family practice setting, it's, you know, we're going to do a ton of stuff on you that's going to take weeks to get done and consult you somewhere. Or if it gets real bad, we send them to Joe.
So a lot of times, you know, as a family practitioner, I kind of come at it as that, like that. Like if I'm seeing this patient in an office setting, you know, what would I want to have done? You know, tomorrow, what do I want them to go?
Right.
Where do I want to send them to for further follow-up? You know, who do I want to send them to? So I look at the ED as a big, big family practice. They come in to me and instead of having to wait, you know, two or three days
for a
blood test
CT
results
scan or, something,
or
right.
2 or 3 weeks for CT scan or ultrasound or whatever the case is, I have the resources available to me right there to get the test done
right
now,
which is kind of nice. That's, You can keep them in a holding pattern until you get the results back in 2 hours and make decisions. Whereas I get nervous sometimes when I send people for ultrasounds and, you know, are they going to go? Are they going to, you know, my patient population, sometimes they don't show. Mm-hmm. There's a very high likelihood they won't. And so I have to impress upon them the importance of getting things done. And when you have them trapped, so to speak, in the emergency department, I guess you can chain them, restrain them. You have restraints, right? You got leathers, right? You can 4 points.
We do indeed.
You can leather. Okay.
Not necessarily for.
Differential diagnosis of like really vague symptoms is one thing. How about working with? Now you work for a practice that is contracted to a hospital.
Correct.
Do you interact with the hospital staff as far as the the physicians, nurse practitioners, PAs, the providers that work for the hospital.
Yeah, so, you know, if I have a patient that I'm concerned about enough that I think this patient needs to be admitted for further testing that we don't do in the ED, like MRI or whatever the case is, or if, you know, I find something on a CT scan, like an acute appendicitis, I'll call the general surgeon up and I'll be like, hey, I need to get this patient admitted. So I have to, you know, I give them the whole rundown, what's going on, why they need to be admitted. And I really haven't had any pushback. Okay. They've been very, very, amicable to work with. And, it's been pretty good. You get kind of treated as a professional and, you know,
that's where I was going. You know that, right? Yeah. That was my next step. My follow-up was, you know, what's the perception been, or how do you feel you've been perceived, especially as a new grad in that environment where you have physicians that have had residency programs that have been for years and you know, have you seen any negative impacts yet?
So no, if I ever get pushback, which I've gotten at one time, I had a patient that needed to go to the ICU. I called because his the sodium level was in the 120s. It was super low, and it was an incidental finding. It was totally, right. You know, comes in with this off complaint of a cough, and I did a, you know, workup on him because he was also said he had some chest pains. So I'm like, all right, so this is we're going to go down this road. So I got a CBC, CMP, troponin, chest X-ray. Went down that road, you know, everything came back normal, except for his electrolytes were way out of balance. So I talked to my collaborating physician who I was working with that day. I'm like, hey, this guy's sodium's in the toilet. You know, I think we need to get him admitted. And I called the ICU. He's like, yeah. Or actually, I called the hospitalist first.
Right.
Hospitalist was like, well, he really should go to the unit with a sodium that's below 130. I'm like, all right, well, it's 129. He's like, well, he still call the unit and let's see if we can get it put in the unit. So I call the unit.
For ICU.
Yeah. Call the ICU. ICU's like, nah, I don't. Let's check another sodium on because my guess is you give him some saline, his sodium's going to come up.
Diluted him.
I'm like, all right. So I give him some saline, which I'd already done. As soon as I saw that came back, I ordered home saline on him.
Yeah.
And then I did a repeat sodium, just the sodium level on him. It actually went down. So I had to call the unit back and they're like, well, this guy's still going to end up getting sent out. I'm like, okay, let me have you talk to my collaborating physician. And so the patient went upstairs about an hour later.
So so your collaborative basically flexed the muscles and got it done.
Yeah. So,
all right. So there was some pushback because of who you were.
Right. And the guy wasn't having any neurological symptoms.
No, that's fine. I've taken care of patients with, you know, a 120 or 119 in the ICU, and they're sitting there smiling at you and they're like, I don't know why I'm here. And, you know, so I understand that. I mean, it's a scary number, and sometimes we have to treat the numbers just right. Because if you get sued later, you could lose your ass because nobody in the right mind is going to, you know, discharge a 117 sodium.
Right, and hyponatremia has just so many
complications
and so many causes.
And it takes so long to get it up that if it goes south, it goes south quickly. So I get that. That was a good call. So that was one instance. Have you had... I hate to use the word subordinate, but have you had any nurses, MAs, support staff give you any headaches because of you being a new NP and maybe not feeling like, man, he's not real confident on this, and you know they're an emergency room nurse that's been doing it for 30 years.
No, really, everybody that I've worked with has been great. You know, Well, most of them know that I'm a new grad NP. Some of them don't. Some of them think I've been around the block a time or two. But everybody's been very helpful. If they have a concern, they see the blood work come back before I do. Hey, they're coming up. Hey, did you see this? Blah blah blah. And they've all been great to work with. No pushback. Cool. They recognize that I do have advanced training. I'm not exactly, you know, I'm not been doing it for 30 years like they have, right. But I do have at least advanced training, and obviously if I have any questions about what's going on, I ask.
And I think that's the biggest thing with support staff is that I try to be overly humble to my support staff and ask them, hey, what does so-and-so usually do for this? Because I would do this, but I don't know what this facility likes. Yeah. You know, and so I ask a lot of questions of the support staff, and I rely a lot of times on what they say because they have seen it 1,000 times before, and they know what's going on, and there are a lot of smart people
and
that
that's
just
don't
have that degree.
That's probably one of actually the hardest things to deal with, is I work with, you know, so many different doctors. At, you know, one day I'm with this doc, next day I'm with this doc, next day I'm with this doc. So I'll go in and see a patient who comes in with chest pain. I'll go in and start my workup on them, and I'll come out and talk to the doc. And I'm like, well, you really didn't need to order this because it's not going to be a benefit. And then you go to the next doc, and it's like, well, you need to order that.
Yeah, you need to order that because even if it comes back normal, you have to show that you did it, or else you're not meeting the standard of care.
Troponin was one of those things we were taught that a doc
Troponin means crap anymore, right? I mean, yeah. It could be a billion things, you know.
Right, it's not necessary. It is kind of specific.
But
if you have EKG
changes with EKG it, then you can,
with the troponin, and
you need to see KMBs and all that other stuff that
I tried
to forget about. Now
we defer all that to cardiology.
And do you?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We get the basic workup, like, hey, you know, because troponin is the most indicative and the quickest to rise. So we get a troponin on them.
If it's elevated, you get the cardiologist on them and just say, here, go away.
And a lot of times we'll have a non-specific, you know, we'll have a normal EKG, no ST depression or elevation, no changes. But we have a positive troponin, and it's slightly positive. Say, instead of less than 0.015, it's, say, 0.1.
Right.
Which is not really great, because if you have a STEMI, your troponin is 20.
Right.
Or
30. You'll know.
Yeah.
Maybe they were shoveling the snow yesterday or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're in Ohio, so there's not snow today, though.
No, it's kind of nice. It's kind of nice. It's like 55 degrees.
A little dreary. Last week, this time, we had snow. It was Wednesday, but last week it snowed. There was a question that came in early, and it was some guy you knew that was a buddy of yours that asked me a question.
Yeah.
It was like on episode 2. I mean, it was way at the beginning. So
it has something to do with males.
Yeah, it was a male question, right? And I didn't really have any. That was one of the things I was going to ask you, and I don't think we ever talked about it, was have you ever experienced as an RN or as an NP, which hasn't been that long of a time yet, but still, any negative comments, any negative situations about being a male in this profession?
Pelvic exams. Women don't want them to, but no, not really. Most of the time, you know, I'll walk in a room and I'll introduce myself, and they're like, "Hey, doc, what's going on?" I'm like, "Well, I'm not really a doc."
Yeah, I get that.
Even when I was an RN, everybody gets that. Like, "No, I'm not a doctor.
Yeah.
I'm a nurse."
Right.
And everybody I've worked with, patients have all been, you know, very open with information. Nobody's been, you know, closed off or was concerned that I was a male, except for I did have one patient, but that was a patient who was had just delivered a baby, didn't want me to check her lochia. But other than that,
got out of that one.
Yeah,
lucky you. I guess I haven't really either. I've had when I was in nursing school, we had one crotchety old nursing instructor that was like, she taught the practical, and she was probably 80 years old, and it was obvious that it was complete reverse sexism, if there is such a real thing. And she made it known that she was like, there's no reason that a male should ever be a nurse, and nursing is for women. And I point blank told her, you better either retire or get with it, because, you know, half of the class after mine was guys. So there was like 20 guys in the accelerated program in Akron that year after me. And I think she did retire. She was probably 80. It was ridiculous. But that was the only time I've ever had a negative. It's always been actually to the positive, where I think it was easier to get a job, especially in ICU, because, you know, they looked at you and you're relatively physically fit. Not that you could tell now, but at one point in time. And you can move people, and that's a nice benefit. And I think that patients typically look at guys and they're like, it's just like what you said, and not that they're right, it's just that perception that we're physicians. And so I think that, you know, I've had nurses with 20 years experience come in the room and say, yeah, this needs to happen. And the patient look at them like they had three heads. And then I've had them, you know, they'll leave and I'll say the same exact thing. And they're like, oh, okay. And they would trust me. And it's like, and I would call them out on it. I said, she just said that. She's been doing this for 20 years longer than me. You know, there's no reason you should be that way, you know, but I think that has been a benefit to me, just being a guy. So I don't know if I've had any real negative experiences with that.
No, if anything, positive.
Positive, yeah, I agree too. And that's a good thing. So we should be positive for everybody, but unfortunately it's not. So what else? We're at 24 minutes. What else do we want to talk about? We've got, let's see. I was talking a lot of insurance stuff. You guys don't have to deal with all that, right? In the emergency department, you don't have to worry about who's got insurance and credentialing and all that stuff. You just get credentialed through the institution and you're done.
Yep. The institution I work for, they do credentialing for everybody that works for them. Plus, they will do outside credentialing. So people will actually pay them
to do their credentialing specialist
for them.
See, and I mentioned that on one of my episodes not too long ago, last couple episodes, where somebody was talking about starting up their own company, and I've seen on some of the Facebook forums that they have credentialing services that are out there just like that, right? Mm-hmm. But every single one of them that is like a professional credentialing service is crap. So I wonder if being tied with an institution, that might be something you guys can look at. If you are working up your own practices, call your local hospitals and see who they use and if they farm out their services. So that might be another option for you that's a local person that you could physically go into their office, point your finger in their face and say, get it done. Because if it's somebody in Utah and you're in Iowa, it's really hard to get your credentialing done by going in their office and screaming at them. So that's a good point. Mm-hmm. I didn't even think about that, right? So that's another interesting avenue that you guys can look into to get your company started and get going on your own. What else do you want to talk about? Anything else going on? Personal life? Anything going on? Family's good. Everybody's good.
Yep.
No sick kids like mine. I got 3 sick kids off and on. They keep trading it back and forth and giving it to me.
Yeah, we've been doing that as well. Yep. Everybody's been sick off and on.
Well, hopefully the weather's going to break. We're going to plant some seeds. I'm getting my garden ready. I'm starting my seeds in the basement. Got my grow lights set up. I got the greenhouse kicking right now with about 30 apple trees. I'm going to expand some more this year, and that's my hobbies for the spring, summer, and fall. And
one thing I do want to add, as far as in the emergency department, you know, the docs that I work for, at least our company, they seek FNPs. That's who they want. They want family nurse practitioners.
Right.
Because the acute cares, honestly, and I'm not saying anything bad about acute care. And
careful, because we have a lot of acute care MPs listening to the show.
They're very good. I know the one that I work with, she's very good, very knowledgeable. She's taught me quite a few things. But it's that limitation on age.
Yeah, right, absolutely. That's not a negative. That's just a fact.
Yeah.
And that's the debate I see on Facebook all the time, where people are their RNs are about to go back to school and they're picking which program, and they put this post up. And you guys that are listening out there, I'm sure you have all seen this post where they say, should I do acute care or should I do FNP? And you get 150 responses in about 10 minutes with their opinion of why you should go one or the other. And it's really a personal decision, right? So if you have no intention of working in a family practice, then why would you do family practice? But that is the benefit. And that was one of the reasons I chose FNP, was it gave me more diversification, because I knew that I could get some kind of certification down the line if I wanted to do mental health, or if I wanted to go into women's health or acute care or whatever. It would be a year or year and a half of extra work versus restarting the whole program over and getting dual certified.
Right. A lot of times, you know, you can do women's health as a family nurse practitioner. You could do mental health as a family nurse practitioner.
Yeah, limitations. So you got to be careful on that one.
It's within the scope of practice of the physician that you work with.
It's still
within our scope of practice.
It's similar, and it's a good point. We could talk about that. It's similar to working in the ED without your advanced certificate. So if you have, here's an example of where I would say it's outside of the scope of a family nurse practitioner, even if your mental health, your collaborative is a mental health provider. If you have somebody that has a dual diagnosis under a DSM-5, that's outside of our scope, because we weren't trained on bipolar or schizophrenia. We were told what they were. We weren't told how to control it with medications, and we didn't do any clinicals in that setting.
Right.
So that's really pretty far. Now, if you have somebody that's got, and I've started people on antidepressants already. I've started people on atypical antidepressants for other things. And so, yeah, I'll use them. Mm-hmm. You know, if somebody comes and says, I'm a little down, and I do their depression screening, and yeah, they're kind of down. They're getting some Celexa or, you know, whatever, right? And that's well within the scope of what we do. And that's debatable. So I see people that say this all the time, you have an FNP, you can do mental health. And it makes me kind of cringe a little because there is a fine line. And I've actually sent, luckily where I am now, and Joe knows where I am, and I'm not telling anybody where it is. Okay? They could probably figure it out if they really cared to find out. They probably could. But I'm not overtly telling anybody where I work because I don't want anybody calling me there. I just don't want to be bugged. But where I work has a very unique situation where we are very well connected with behavioral health specialists. So I have the ability to say, all right, we're going to get you an appointment somewhere else that is not here to handle these issues because this is beyond the scope that I feel comfortable with.
Right.
And I've done that already multiple times in the family practice setting because not only is I don't feel comfortable with it, but I don't know how to measure the outcomes. So if I started somebody on multiple antipsychotics and antidepressants and all these things, I don't know how they're really getting better. I don't know what to expect. So I know what they should probably be on. I know I could look up what the starting doses are. That doesn't mean that I should be doing it. Right. And so that makes me nervous. And I think that you could use that same philosophy in a lot of, you know, if somebody comes in and they've got an atypical PAP, right? They've got atypical cells, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we happen to have a culp, a colposcopy, you know, to do biopsies in the office there that somebody else used to use. I'm not doing it. It's outside of my scope. Could I do it? Yeah, I probably could do it. I probably would be safe. But if it goes south, I don't have any training in that. I've seen it done a bunch of times in clinicals, but I'm not going out on that limb. They're going to OBGYN. I'm sending them out. And, you know, so you can use that same philosophy and draw the line. And I had somebody just say the other day, I don't feel comfortable doing this specific whatever it was. And my response was, if you don't feel comfortable doing it, in Ohio, the rule is currently, if you don't feel comfortable doing it, you're not allowed to do it. That's the rule. So, and I'm pretty sure that most nurse practice acts are going to follow something similar to that. So that's where I get sketchy, and the hackles on my neck start standing up when I see people saying, yeah, you can do everything as an FNP, and it scares the shit out of me that people actually believe that. Now, maybe they're very good at what they do.
The other part of that is if you look at it, you know, we're family practice. So if you look at a family practice doc, they'll staff urgent cares. You won't find a family practice doctor, a medical doctor, in an emergency department. They are family practice, and they can... They'll be in urgent care, family practice.
Or family practice. They're not in the emergency room setting. Right.
Emergency docs are board-certified emergency physicians. Right. OBGYNs are board-certified
exactly. Yep.
Obstetrician, gynecologists.
And then they
have all separate board certifications for if they're working in a specialty, whatever the specialty is, pulmonology, oncology, everybody has their specialty. So if you look at it that way, family practice nurses... We belong in family practice.
Yeah, but here's the issue, though, that comes up. And this is where I flip the other side of the argument is we have a lot of specialists out there. Pulmonologies, and you just mentioned pulmonology. If you have a pulmonologist that wants a nurse practitioner and they hire a family nurse practitioner, that's okay. Right. Because there's not a pulmonology certificate.
Correct.
For nurse practitioners that I'm aware of. And maybe there is. I don't know. But...
maybe some like continuing education.
Continuing education and talking. But that's where the Board of Nursing says you follow the scope of the practice of the physician that you're with. But I always look at it as if there is a track that you can get education, training, or certificate for, you need to do that to work in that specific area. If there's no such thing that exists, then it's kind of fair game, which doesn't make a lot of sense. So that's where it gets dicey, and that's where it's questionable. And you know, my first job offer was through rheumatology, and I didn't know shit about rheumatology. I mean, we talked a little bit about it in class, but you know, I could learn anything, you know, with exposure. Mm-hmm. But you know, they're going to want me on day one to start prescribing medicines for things that I don't know anything about. You know, and they, you know, they'll train you, but you know, you'll learn that. But there's a big leap of faith, you know, that this doc's not screwing up, and I don't know if this doc's got it right, and I'm just going to continuing his meds, and if he didn't get it right, and then I'm just continuing it in the wrong direction, that puts me just as liable as him. So it's a scary thing without that training and skill.
I would agree.
So that's a good point. I know I'm hogging all that. I have him over to talk, but I'm talking all the time.
Hey, it's your show.
It's my show, right? Damn it. I'm paying the web hosting. So anything else that's going on? Anything burning in your, you know, discussion topics, things that you think that, how do you think the show's going? You think it's, are you?
I think it's good.
You like the format?
Talk a lot about contracts.
A lot of contracts. But that's what people keep asking me for, man. I still get probably two or three emails and.
Because what do nurses know about contracts?
I don't know, right?
Unless they're like a lawyer and an engineer who do contract law.
Yeah, something like that. Some weirdo. Nobody checks my transcripts. I just tell people I have all these degrees. Nobody knows.
Right? I can verify. I've actually seen him in his basement.
Yeah, he's seen him on the wall. But yeah, the contract thing seems to be a big hot topic, and there's a lot of people that have insurance questions, and I see people using the wrong words all the time, and I just kind of, eesh, you know, it's not that they just don't know any different, and that's fine, but using the wrong words as a professional downgrades the profession. And that's one of the things that I'm trying to combat, to be honest with you. I want people to try and use the right words. So when I'm using the wrong words, I expect you guys to yell at me, including you, Joe. Yell at me. I want to hear it. Because if we're not using the right words, we look like idiots to the rest of the community. And there's too many other people out there. There's PAs, there's physicians, there's other nurses, there's administrators, all these people. And if we use the wrong words when we're talking to people, it makes us look uneducated. So if we use the right words, we can really promote the profession. If we talk intelligently, we can promote the profession, as I'm stuttering over my second beer.
Or worse than that, it makes you look incompetent.
Incompetent, yeah. And nobody wants to look incompetent. And saying the wrong words over and over again confidently really makes you look incompetent. Right? I mean, when you see that one person that says, what is it with the pulse ox? What is it, what did they used to say all the time in the hospital? The residents would say it wrong and just look. And it wasn't pulse ox, but it was something like that. And they would say it wrong every time. What is it? Yeah, I know you know it.
Probably. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, let's have another beer. I agree. drinking beer while you're sick is probably not the smartest choice. I'm not on antibiotics. It's viral. So I'm okay, right?
You should have burned out of you. You're fine with beer as long as you're not taking metronidazole.
I still don't. I don't do it with any. I tell my patients don't drink anything while you're taking any of the stuff. But just so you don't mess up the liver. Save your liver for later so you can enjoy a nice adult beverage. So what else? Anything else going on? Any new hobbies? You've been golfing?
No, not
planning on golfing this summer?
Oh, yeah. If I get to. I've been framing basements.
Yeah, Joe's like me, but he's got other talents. He's a mechanic. He's a carpenter. He's a nurse. He's got a bunch of other stuff. So that's why we got along so well. That we're old, and we just accidentally sat next to each other. We're too lazy to move in class, and that's how we kind of just
hung out. Too much.
It was too old. Yeah. Joe likes blowing stuff up in the military and a whole bunch of fun stuff. So that's cool. Anyways, I appreciate Joe coming. We're at 37 minutes. It goes by quick when you got somebody here talking with you, and it's a lot of fun. So I hope you come back and do this again, and I hope you guys enjoy the format of just two people sitting around drinking beers and having fun. And anybody that's in the Ohio area, give me a call, stop over and have a beer. I always have beer in the fridge and tell me what you guys do, and I'll have you guys on the show. Anybody's welcome. So,
and if you're interested in pursuing the emergency nurse practitioner, just go to AANP and look it up under the certifications. It has everything written down there, what you need to do. And then just start Googling stuff, because from that website, I got onto, it's called Emergency Medicine Boot Camp. Mm-hmm. It's a 4-day conference out in Las Vegas. Gives you 26 and a half hours of continuing education. Plus it's a bunch of physicians who like to have a lot of fun. They're emergency physicians, and they teach PAs, NPs, different things regarding emergency medicine. They've also got a clinical day where they do procedures, teaching intubation, central line placement, a bunch of different things like that. And then they also have an advanced one. They also have a pediatric one. So there's a bunch of different things out there that will get you to 100 hours if you are a family nurse practitioner currently working in an emergency department. That'll get you to the 100 hours plus gets you the procedure hours you need in order to sit for the exam. So
that's cool. Yeah, I appreciate you giving that information. And I might try to find that AANP link, and I'll put it in the show notes below the audio file on the website. So if you're listening on iTunes, that's one instance where you may have to log into my webpage, thenpdude.com, and check it out and see what maybe you guys want to try for a certification on that. And I bet they have others listed under that certification for other things as well. So if you are in pulmonology, maybe you want to look at a certification that maybe they have one. I don't know. I haven't looked. So I'll scope through that too and see what they got. But I appreciate you coming over. It's been fun.
We'll be drinking.
We're going to have a couple more beers before you leave. So stick around. Guys out there in the internets, don't forget to comment on the show below. You can comment on my Facebook page. Don't forget to like and share. I think I'm up to 560 already. Seems like it was like less than a week ago. I was begging people to get to 500. We're already at 560. So spread the word. Keep sharing the show. You got to share the show. That's the best way to do it. You like it, and it comes up on your status, like, you know, so-and-so liked this. But a lot of times people don't really, they kind of gloss over that. If you share the show, the page, the Facebook page to your page or to any of the Facebook groups, say, hey, Jeff just talked about this on the NP Dude. Share that show. Don't hesitate. That's what it's there for. We need to get the word out. Don't forget iTunes. Joe is a big plug there for that. It's there's no way for me to track it, though. That's the only thing I don't like about it. I can't track it. I can tell people are looking because it gives me like a scale bar of the most popular shows. So I can tell people are hitting them, but there's no way, there's no like counter or anything. So the only counters I get are the people that actually download the show from my website. And I'm still holding pretty steady. It's been pretty flat for the last week, but I think that's because of camping and everything else that's been going on. So thanks again for listening, guys. I appreciate it. I'm sorry this went a little long, so you may have to break it up if you get a short drive. And just keep sharing the show. Thanks for listening. We'll talk soon.